Do you understand why I love this movie so much?
No.
For Sav Rogers, a queer kid growing up in Kansas, role models came from an unexpected source.
When I was 12, I had a movie where the gay and lesbian characters were good and funny and out. They were able to live as their authentic selves.
Chasing Amy.
Chasing Amy.
Chasing Amy.
The third film from director Kevin Smith.
It's about a guy who falls in love with a lesbian.
But Sav's about to find out. Life's not about finding your heroes.
Welcome to the house that Amy built.
It's about finding yourself.
I'm directing a project about the legacy of Chasing Amy as an LGBTQ film.
Do you find the film to be authentic to the LGBTQ community?
I find it authentic to the straight dude who falls for a queer woman community.
No longer being a lesbian by meeting the right man.
That's gonna be controversial.
Ben Affleck's goatee was a bad idea.
What's going in the movie?
Something that's problematic can still mean a lot in your development.
It was brave to portray somebody fluid.
Seeing that movie helped me figure out, oh, that's me.
That's gay.
This girl loves me.
It's cool to come to a place where a bunch of stuff changed your life.
Joining us today on Moving Radio is the director of a documentary film that's going to be screaming as part of Rainbow Visions Film Festival right here in Edmonton on Saturday, May 18th at 4:30 p.m. at the Metro Cinema. Chasing Amy is the film. And if it sounds familiar, well, you're right. It should sound kind of familiar because that's part of what the film is about. Sav, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me, Christian. It's a pleasure to be here, and we're so excited to come to Edmonton.
Yeah, I know this film had actually screened in Calgary at Cuff Docs late last year. So it's nice to be able to get an opportunity for people here to be able to see the film itself as it's been on its festival journey. For anybody that isn't in the know or hasn't heard about this film yet, it's more than just a documentary, right? I mean, really, this is kind of it's a trans coming of age love story in a lot of ways, right? So tell us how just borrowing your mom's DVD of Chasing Amy led you on this journey itself to finally culminate with a documentary film in your back pocket.
Where to start? I mean, I grew up in Kansas here in the United States, which when I was growing up, at least, was not particularly LGBTQ friendly, at least in the area that I was, you know, growing up in. And so I didn't know I was queer yet. You know, I was just a kid, you know, having regular kid problems. But I think, you know, my peers around me clocked that I was queer or thought I was queer before I knew. And so I dealt with a lot of really just not fun times at school as a result of that. And it left me like really anxious and really depressed. You know, I was othered, but I wasn't really sure why. And then, you know, I was going through a phase at the same time where I just wanted to watch Ben Affleck movies for the most part. And that was because he was in this movie called Daredevil that my mom took me to see in the movie theaters. And I just like loved him and thought he was fantastic. You know, who doesn't love a big, larger than life movie star? And so my mom happened to have Chasing Amy, among other Kevin Smith films and a lot of other films by 90s auteurs like Quentin Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez, Michael Moore, etc. And I, you know, was just browsing her movie collection and I saw this movie called Chasing Amy. And I was like, oh, mom, can I watch this? And she was like, it's rated R. I don't really remember why. Sure, go ahead. And I watched it and I definitely should not have seen it at 12 in some ways. But the movie quite literally, you know, saved my life because I was able to use it as a lifeboat. Because I wasn't really exposed to anything that depicted LGBTQ people in a way that felt fully human, you know. And you look at the characters of Alyssa Jones and you look at Hooper, and what I saw were like really interesting people with interesting jobs who were funny and confident and provided a lot of wisdom throughout it. But at the end of the day, that movie's a love story, and it's a love story that doesn't work out in a sense. But it's still this like deeply romantic movie. And so I was really attracted to all of those things. And it was this life raft for me at a time where, you know, as a kid, I was just like deeply, deeply depressed. So when I say it saved my life, I genuinely mean it. But it also presented a path to make me want to become a filmmaker. And so I kind of clung to Chasing Amy throughout my life for a lot of reasons. And it became like a part of my personality in a way. you know, fast forward, I become a filmmaker. I'm out of film school and I'm kind of faced with this idea that I want to make a feature and I want to make a feature that only I could make. It started in this place of discovery of just trying to explore that conflict between the LGBTQ community and Chasing Amy, because a lot of people in the community don't love that movie because of its depiction of lesbians, bi people, the use of slurs, among other things that make it a product of its time. But every movie's a product of its time. So this movie that saved my life has this great conflict with other LGBTQ people, and that's the place of discovery. And over time, it became this really personal journey where not only did I come out for the second time, but I come of age against the backdrop of Chasing Amy as I am making this documentary. And so it's everything you said. It is, you know, there is a coming of age. It is a coming of age story. There is a trans aspect to it because I'm trans. It is a love story. And it's an exploration of what happens when you know you exist and what cinema can do for us. So it's a lot of things all in one, and it makes it super niche in some ways, but also really universal, because I think anybody can relate to feeling discounted and loving something so much.
And I think the film is really interesting because it does all those things you say, but I think there's another layer to it and a couple other layers. One is it's the journey of you becoming a filmmaker, and in a lot of ways too, it's the journey of you maybe discovering, how much do I want to talk about myself? Because there are lots of documentaries where I'm sure people are like, I'm 100% on board for this journey, but I don't know. I think maybe just your lack of, you know, experience in detail in like making cinema at that point in time, combined with this journey that you're taking personally, makes it incredibly refreshing that I don't know that somebody else that had a ton of background could have made. Do you find, looking back on this film now, that, you know, you have some distance from it, like 10 months from the original release and, you know, years from when you originally made it, do you look back and say, like, man, I have evolved a lot, not just as filmmaker or person, or do you kind of feel like it's a slower grading curve than you thought?
You know, I think we're all evolving every day. We're changing, we're growing, we're expanding our thinking, ideally. I mean, I guess there are a lot of people who maybe aren't doing that, and that explains the state of the world right now. But I think as filmmakers, we have to be considerate of where we've been if we want to know where we want to go. So when I look back at the process of making Chasing Amy, you know, I wouldn't change a second of it, a frame of it, even if there are parts that are painful, even if there are parts that, you know, hurt or feel embarrassing or any of those things that come along with coming of age. You know, it's a lot more fun to watch other people do that than it is to watch yourself do that. And I always say, like, hey, if you like this movie and think you should do something similar, consider don't do that, because, you know, it can be painful at times. When I look at the film, I'm really proud of it. I wouldn't change a frame of it. But, you know, I think that work will definitely inform what's to come, you know, whether that's a narrative film, which is where I always really wanted to be, or another documentary project, or maybe I'll get to do TV at some point. But it's all a learning experience. And it's all something that in some ways it's like, okay, I told the story that I always wanted to tell, you know, one that was literally a lifetime in the making for me. And now I get to do something else and ideally be really creative with it and take all the lessons I learned from this movie and apply it to the next.
Maybe the seeds of it was in that watching that film at first and how you're feeling. And then obviously, you know, that TED Talks that you refer to in the film, and that's, you know, easily accessible online, is something that opened up those opportunities for you. How were you kind of feeling at that moment? Talk to us, for those of us that haven't seen it, about venturing on this idea of creating a film, like meeting, you know, Kevin Smith or Joey or any of those people that are involved with it that you end up interviewing. That would be one thing, but to be like, I don't want to just meet him. Like, I'm going to make this a journey I'm going to record, not just for myself, but for other people. Did you see that coming? Were you eager to have that happen? And how exciting was that for you at the time? Because it probably would have blown my mind once those doors started opening for me.
For context, you know, I'm not somebody who despite, you know, how painfully earnest I think I come across in Chasing Amy, you know, celebrity is not, as fascinated as I am with celebrity and pop culture, like at a comic convention, I'm not interested in standing in line to pay somebody money to like manufacture a moment with me or like sign a thing, right? You know, no disrespect to anybody who wants to do that or to people who, you know, go do that for a living, but it's not something that fills my cup, so to speak. And so if I had just met any of these people independently of the documentary, that would have been nice, but it would have been, you know, a very brief, arguably transactional moment. And I think what we were trying to do in the documentary was really go on this journey of what does this film mean today? How did this shape us? How did we shape it and its legacy? And then it became my personal story. And then the story becomes, how did Chasing Amy shape me as a kid? Where do I fit in the story of Chasing Amy, I guess, which I guess, you know, there wasn't much competition for it, you know, in terms of like people who were, you know, studying it their whole lives or whatever. And then how does Chasing Amy transform me? And so I was so excited to have anybody want to talk to me for the purposes of the movie. But I don't think it would have been the same if we weren't making the movie. You know, it would have just been like, oh, a nice little fan moment. You can kind of see it when I go to the Quick Stop for the first time in Chasing Amy, where I'm there for a second and I'm like, oh, okay, let's go. You know, because it's those places only have as much meaning as we give them. You know, it's really great to do a movie tour. When I sat in the same seat that Ben Affleck sat in, I didn't feel Ben Affleck's energy transfer into my body. You know what I mean? But it had great significance because of what it meant to me as a kid. And so I was so flattered and thankful that anybody would want to talk to us for this movie, because a lot of people were very confused by the premise early on. But the fact that so many people, you know, like Bob Hawke and Guinevere and Joey and Kevin and Scott Mosier, like all of these like incredible people decided to sit down and give me any of their time was the honor of a lifetime. And to be able to kind of go into that room, you know, at the beginning as a fan, but ideally leaving those rooms as a peer was transformative. And I'll never be able to thank all of them enough.
We're speaking today with Sav Rogers, director of the film Chasing Amy. It's to be screened as part of Rainbow Visions Film Festival on Saturday, May 18th at 4:30 p.m. You can see it in person at the Metro Cinema. I highly suggest you do that because there's no legal way you should be seeing this any other way. So go to the Metro and check it out. Sav, you know, you talk about that kind of process of going through, and this is kind of what I liked. And you even include that little moment of being at the Quick Stop in the trailer of like, I'm good. You don't have this insane reverence so that people don't look at you as like you're blinded by fandom. At least I don't see it that way. And I also like the fact that you didn't approach this in such an academic way that when you gave that TED talk, that's why it probably worked for you, is because it was so honest. And it's about the genuine connections that people have with film, as opposed to, you know, somebody who's sitting in their ivory tower of criticism and kind of looking down on it and trying to pick it apart, right? It was personal. So let's talk a little bit about those personal moments, maybe through the interview process, and then I'll get to the personal stuff that's maybe more directly about you. When you were going through your journey of gathering all these people to talk to, who did you feel like when you were sitting across from them was the moment for you that you were like, not a light bulb moment, but one of those moments where you kind of felt like, I think I'm becoming the interviewer I need to be for this film?
It's such a good question. I mean, first of all, every single person we talked to, whether they ended up in the final film or ended up on the cutting room floor, just because there wasn't enough time to include all of the ridiculously smart people we talked to, I felt transformed in those moments. You know, we would challenge each other's points of view, and not in like a barb for barb kind of way, but in a just an open exchange of ideas and really engaging in a dialogue. And my interview style is very conversational, which is one of the reasons that we put a camera on me, so that you would be able to have those moments in context of how I was talking to somebody. So one of my favorite bits of interviews that we did was with Princess Weeks, where we're totally on the same wavelength on everything. You know, she's expressing points that I've been dying for somebody to say. But you can't, like, you can't ask somebody, hey, can you say this point? Like, you just have to keep going until you find somebody who authentically has a different point of view. And so we talked to a big range of people, from people who love Chasing Amy to people who detested it, people who wrote think pieces about it to people who were lifelong fans of Chasing Amy and Kevin Smith and everywhere in between. And all of those people had complex feelings on the movie. There was no just one size fits all answer. And so this, like, premise that I'm kind of seeking at the beginning of the movie, you know, maybe doesn't exist. This idea of, is there a consensus on Chasing Amy? And there's not, because film is so subjective. I mean, I joke all the time that, you know, maybe the only perfect movie is Parasite. I think that's the one movie that everybody seems to be able to agree on. But even then, I'm sure it has its detractors, right? In terms of, like, moments that felt transformative, they were happening all the time. But the big moments that happened that really transformed me, you know, was talking to Kevin and Joey and Guinevere. You know, that late second act chunk of the movie where I'm having a series of difficult conversations that shift my perspective as not just a filmmaker, not as a fan of Chasing Amy, but as a person. You know, this idea that there's even more gray area in the world, not just Chasing Amy, but in the world, than I ever thought. And again, you see this painfully earnest kid from Kansas, you know, going out and taking this big swing, trying to make his dream movie. And he gets the thing that he thought he wanted, and it's not the thing that he actually needed the whole time. And the things that he needed the whole time were these real human conversations with people who shaped my perspective on what it means to be a storyteller. And that was just an incredible privilege.
Well, that's a good thing to talk about right now, I think, is that how have you, after this process, I don't know, sharpened your skills as a storyteller? What are some of the things that the learning curve has been for you as you've gone through this process?
I think the biggest learning curve for me was post. You know, I love talking to people. I love engaging with people. I love getting to talk to people like you. With every interview I do for this movie, I consider a new point of view or a new thing that I hadn't thought about before. That's the benefit of you being the audience and me being the filmmaker, is I hear your reaction reflected back and there's something to learn there. But I would say post-production was the biggest learning curve for me because, you know, one, it was not the intention for me to be the primary participant in the documentary. That was not something that I had planned from the outset. And I think everybody else but me had kind of figured out what the deal was before I did. I think I was in denial because I didn't want to be in the documentary at all at the outset. But by the time we had started day one, I had conceded to being in it about as much as Bing Liu is in Mind of the Gap, which is a gorgeous documentary, a beautiful story. And his personal story really anchors it and makes it just hit you right in the heart, even more than the rest of the film. So when we got to post, one, not only was I seeing my every mistake, every time I said or too long, every time I asked a question that I was like, oh, you can do better than that. Every time I just made like a coming of age mistake, you know, the things that you make a mistake on your first feature, you know, things that you're embarrassed by, and you have to make hard decisions in post. And if you want to like shed your ego and any sense of false image about yourself, cut a movie where you didn't want to be in it and sit there and like have to story produce on the fly in post-production, trying to figure out what is it that you want to say because your original premise has changed so much. It was a very humbling experience. But the other part of it was that I transition in the film. You know, I come out as trans and I'm preserving a part of myself on screen that I wouldn't choose to put on my Instagram feed as a before and after. You know, I don't like to engage with that kind of thing. It's not for me, let alone putting it in a movie for people to see for all time, as long as they have access to this digital file or whatever. So that was not fun. And that was also very humbling. And that was a difficult process to navigate. And full credit to our producer, Alex Schmitter, for helping me navigate that and trying to figure out what's the best way to showcase that transition and kind of giving me permission to not just do what was prescribed to me by the previous 100 years of cinema. and to try to think about it in a way of like, how would I actually have this conversation in real life? And so what you see in the movie is very much how I am in real life. So those were the most difficult things. It was hard on my heart, but we had such an incredible post team, you know, Sharika, our editor, Lauren, our AE, Esme, our colorist. I mean, they just made this whole process so much easier. And I don't know what I would have done without them and all of our producers.
Now, as you've been out on the road, Sav, and touring with this film, and also even when you're not there, I'm sure you're getting responses from people that you don't know at all. I also assumed that at a certain point you had to know you were making this for all the other Savs out there that kind of were in a similar situation that you were in. So how has that been for you? Has that been a weight that you accept and that has been easier to deal with because of your experience? Or did you feel like that was another kind of ripple effect of the film that maybe you didn't expect and you have to accept because you put yourself in that position, but that's a challenge to negotiate? Because I know that stuff can be.
You know, I don't think I really understood the impact of the Joey interview as much as I do now that the film is out in the world. You know, the questions that she's posing to me in the interview, I understand much more now that the film is out in the world. And in the same way that I was having a dialogue with Chasing Amy, there are people who are having a dialogue with Chasing Amy for the people who have been able to see it, which have been a lot of people around the world at this point through film festivals, but like 68 bookings. And it's really great for an independent documentary. Yeah, I mean, I've been able to meet so many people. Riley and I have met so many people, the producers, like all of us have just had these amazing conversations with people who've seen the movie and cried, or, you know, told us that they drove from 2 hours away because they wanted to see it and it was the closest thing in their area, or meeting parents of trans kids or meeting queer kids now who say that like this movie made them feel better or less alone, or it gave them hope. And that's genuinely so moving, because thinking back to that 12-year-old kid in Kansas who felt so alone, I don't think he could have imagined any of this. And so I'm so thankful. And I'm also sometimes overwhelmed. And I, you know, don't go off on Instagram for a couple of weeks because it feels like a bit much to have that kind of attention, even at this, like, I would say, smaller scale, you know, like I'm not Kevin Smith and I don't want to be, you know, the way that, you know, he, you know, exists in public and has historically existed in public, I have great admiration for, but I don't think I could hack that. I'm just a guy who wants to tell stories. And so all that to say, I'm so thankful for everybody who's seen this movie and shared their story with us. And it's what you kind of have to expect when you put yourself out there in that way. But I also want to let people know, like, if you're seeking genuine connection, you don't have to do what I did. You know, you don't have to give a TED talk about things that are hard. You know, you don't have to make a movie about some of the hardest things you've ever done or dealt with. There are so many other ways to connect and find community. And I really look forward to cultivating more community in the future through storytelling and finding sincere hope and joy in things. And talking about how we face the hard things together. And I think that's what it's all about.
We're speaking on Moving Radio today with Sav Rogers, director of Chasing Amy. It's going to be screening as part of Rainbow Visions Film Festival on Saturday, May 18th at 4:30 p.m. at the Metro Cinema. You can get your tickets at the Metro Cinema at the door if you like, or ahead of time on their website or on the Northwest Fest Rainbow Visions website as well. So we'd kind of discuss the fact that, you know, you've been a bunch of different places, from Tribeca to Edmonton now with this film. You're kind of closing in on that year-long cycle of the documentary being released. This is another interesting time where it starts to get fresh again, because you're on the precipice of where does this film go next, right? And I think sometimes people out there at large just assume that, you know, all the companies buy up everything. And I'm like, it does certainly feel like that, but that is not the case necessarily. So how have you started to deal with this next step in the process of the distribution of the film on a wider scale and kind of meeting with those companies. Has that been another layer of maybe learning from post to now dealing with, okay, how do we get this product out to even more people and make sure that it has a life beyond this 10-month, 12-month cycle?
It's a great question. I mean, one of our producers, Carrie Radigan, loves to say, every day is a school day. Funny story, she said in front of Kevin at his film festival, December in 2022. And I've heard him say it several times since. He like wrote it down. He's like, what was that you said? Every day is a school day. Like he wrote it down in his phone. It was very cute. So yes, every day is a school day. And I think navigating the distribution conversation has definitely been a learning experience. You know, distribution is this like really nebulous thing that they claim to teach you in film school, but don't really teach you. They claim to teach you before you make your first movie. And it's not really until you're in it and in these conversations and going through the process that you really understand, you know, the financial backbone of the industry and, you know, what is being valued by corporations, by executives who want to keep their jobs, by all of these things. And, you know, ultimately we just live in a really fear-based world where everybody is so afraid all the time. And I think people in these positions are no different, which I understand. You know, I experience fear, you know, I was very fearful leading up to Tribeca. Certainly I was like, all right, if people hate this, my real life is over, not just my filmmaking career, but like my real life. So approaching these distribution conversations has been really difficult in this market. I mean, specifically here in the US, the entertainment industry is having a big crisis coming off of the COVID-19 pandemic and the WGA strike that was, you know, caused by studios not wanting to pay writers. The DGA almost struck, and then the SAG-AFTRA strike happened because they didn't want to negotiate with actors. Combined with the cost of living crisis that is making the cost of everything go up, including labor, inflation. I mean, there's a lot of bad stuff happening right now. And also, it doesn't help that the entertainment industry doesn't know what it wants to be. Does it want to be a content farm? Does it want to be tied to Wall Street forever? Or does it want to make movies? Does it want to make television? Does it want to make things that matter and have cultural resonance that can also make them money? And I'm sure it's an easier thing that's said than done from my perspective, sitting down here as an independent filmmaker, but it still kind of feels ridiculous on this side of it. And the fact that acquisitions have slowed down so much, it's, I think, pretty unconscionable, honestly. I was on a panel earlier today with the Film Collaborative, who represents Chasing Amy on the festival circuit. And I was sitting there with like these three other just incredible documentary producers and filmmakers, and we were all just like, we were like, that's the $1 million question, is how do you fix this, how do you make it work, and that's the thing that nobody can figure out right now. And I'm just like, okay, well, I feel less alone if these brilliant people are also having a hard time, but it doesn't make me feel better about the state of this business. And so ultimately, like, you know, we've got some interested buyers, which is fantastic. It's more than I could have said a year ago. The only thing I can control is what I do. And so my goal is just to make another movie. And, you know, as a commercially minded filmmaker who wants to tell stories about how queer, you know, how queer people deal with hope, or, you know, in the documentary sense, like the way that pop culture affects us and how we shape it back, you know, I think that there's a lot of opportunities to tell cool stories, even if I can't control if an executive loves a movie or not, or maybe they love it, but they can't buy anything right now because their slate is 80% commission and 20% acquisition. It makes it really difficult for the independent filmmaker. And so we've got to create our own ecosystem. People have been saying it for decades. Ted Hope has been saying this for 40 years of independent filmmakers have got to find another way other than hoping studios like us. And we've yet to create that, but I am confident that we can find another pathway together. But I'm deeply envious of all the people who live in Canada who have opportunities to be funded by the government. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, that's okay. It's a really nice thing that we're glad you're jealous of. That's for sure.
Canada's got it figured out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I also appreciate the fact that, you know, you're candid about that, because I think there's a perception sometimes where it's like, oh, so you did this thing, so now it's just automatically going to happen. And I've seen that question so many times in festivals that I'm like, oh, I don't think they really understand how this works most of the time. And some people will have a film toil for years before it really finds a home and a place where it can be seen somewhat more accessibly without much promotion. So you've actually struck a chord with people. I think this film has had, you know, an impact on its audience. And I think that's probably the biggest calling card you have at that point, is that there's an audience now and you've connected with people. So that's a testament to you, you know, your natural ability and the things that you've learned through different things. I think, didn't you go to some program through Telluride, I believe, as well, or something? I think that was...
It's so funny you mentioned that. The place where I decided I was going to make Chasing Amy come hell or high water was at the Telluride Film Festival. I was part of their student symposium in 2017, which, if you're a film student listening to this, apply to the Telluride Student Symposium and also apply to the similar program that they have at the Santa Barbara Film Festival. What they do at Telluride is they pick 50 film students from around the world and they subsidize a lot of the costs to get out to Telluride, and they give you a pass to the festival, and you are there meeting some of the best filmmakers in the world who are playing there. The year I was there, I met Todd Haynes and Chloe Zhao, and I sat next to Ed Lockman at a screening of Faces Places, where JR came out afterwards, and Agnes Varda's daughter was there. It was one of the most transformative experiences of my life. And being there and being in that environment, it was the year that Greta Gerwig premiered Lady Bird. Like, it was such a fantastic year for independent film. And being in that environment made me feel like, I think I can do this. I think I can actually do this, because so much of the process was demystified by these career filmmakers who were doing big things. And I think at that point, Chloe Zhao was doing The Writer. I think that was her second film. And, you know, and she gave me like really candid advice there of just like, you know, don't put all your hopes on this one institution, for example. And it was just the best thing. And I got to say, like, anything that I have is thanks to mentorship by teachers or filmmakers who have come before, but it's also thanks to film festivals, whether they played a terrible student short film I made or Telluride bringing me into the fold and thinking that, you know, I was worthy of being in that group of people. That sense of community and belonging has done everything for me. And so, like, you know, I'm so happy that we've been able to play at so many film festivals and connect with so many people, because a festival Q&A and like talking to people afterwards is truly where I feel most at home in the world. Sorry to go on another diatribe, but I just had to say, like, thank you, Telluride.
That's okay. That's okay. I'm pretty sure I picked it up because you talked to one of our correspondents on the show, Lindsay Campbell, for the Cuff Docs interview. And I think that's because I was like, I remember them talking about something like that. So I was like, yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Our guest today on Moving Radio has been Sav Rogers. We are talking to him about Chasing Amy. I encourage you, I implore you, look, if I could take you out of your house and take you to the Metro Cinema, drive you there politely, right? I'll be in the front, you'll be in the back. I'd take you there, right? And because it's a Saturday and I got the time. Saturday, May 18th at 4:30 p.m. at the Metro Cinema. You should check it out and bring all your friends with you. And you know what? Even your enemies, that's okay too. We'll take them too. Sav, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for the film. All right. It's a really incredible piece. I really look forward to seeing what comes next, after this next step. It's an impressive, you know, at least within a larger arena, even though I know you've done work before, as a documentary, is a pretty impressive piece of work. So congratulations to you and the whole team behind the film, because I know it takes a village to make a movie.
Thank you, sir, on behalf of me and the whole team. And I now wish I lived in Canada so I could hear you on the radio all the time. Maybe I need to move to.
Oh, trust me. I put so many people to sleep.
You have a very soothing voice. They can hire you for Headspace or the Calm app or something. You make a lot of money.
Well, that's very sweet of you to say. I'll start to look at that. I'll talk to my management.
Hey, I'll have my people call your people. We'll make it happen.
Okay, that sounds perfect. Well, Sav, thank you for your time. And I encourage people, connect with this film on social media, online. That's a very important thing for this as well. So, you know, it's super easy. All you got to do is just look it up in your search bar on whatever your social media app is, and you'll find it.